Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And today we're going to tackle one of the most controversial issues of 2013. I'm sure you'll agree that there was a dispiriting end to the year as a series of studies were released, which suggest that we're wasting our time taking our vitamin pills, the supplement industry is basically taking the public for a ride, innumerable articles appeared suggesting that supplements were bad. Some of the headlines, one of the most lurid headlines, How the Vitamin Industrial Complex Swindled America. That's one of the headlines. The New York Times blog, Should We Toss Our Vitamin Pills? The Detroit Free Press featured this headline, Stop Wasting Money on Vitamins and Supplements, Report Says. Do Vitamins Block Disease? The Washington Post headline, Some Disappointing News. Los Angeles Times, How Do Americans Waste $28 Billion a Year on Vitamins? Doctors Say. This year we were forced once again into damage control mode, and you've heard me issue some very, very detailed criticisms of the studies. And I also wrote an article that was in Mind Body Green on the subject. To date, I've had about 2,500 shares. That means a lot more than that. People have read that article. Today, I've invited an expert who has just written a very detailed critique of the vitamin studies and all the hoopla that has accompanied them. He has been a guest on Health Talk. You've heard him before on my program. He is Dr. Thomas Gwilliams. He is a PhD, and he was the founder of something called the POINT Institute. That's an independent research organization that's focused on examining and disseminating information about the use of natural therapeutic options for treating and preventing chronic diseases. And he earned his doctorate from the Medical College of Wisconsin, which is a prestigious research institute. And he also is the Vice President of Science and Regulatory Affairs for Orthomolecular Products. So that's a very, very high-quality supplement company. Don't go to the health food stores and look for their products, because they only make targeted supplements for doctors to prescribe to their patients. So I feature their products for my patients, and they're also available via the Internet through my website, drhoffman.com. Dr. Gwilliams teaches at the University of Wisconsin School of Pharmacy, and he has written innumerable articles and has lectured very extensively. And he is, I spoke to him last week because he's going to be a guest in 2014. He's going to talk to us in a month about essential fatty acids, and he's going to talk about some of the controversies associated with essential fatty acids. But I said, do you have anything to say about the vitamin controversy? And he said, indeed I do. In fact, I'm writing a paper on that. He just finished that paper, and I posted it on Facebook, and it's available if you go to the POINT Institute website. That's pointinstitute.org. And it's entitled, The Case is Closed. Editorial Bias Prevents Reasonable Evaluation of Dietary Supplements. So without further ado, here's Dr. Gwilliams. It's a pleasure having you on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.
It's great to be with you again, Dr. Hoffman.
Okay, tell us again, the POINT Institute is about, you do very high-quality research on vitamins and supplements. And so it must be really like a shot in the heart to you to hear that all that research has been a waste of time, and even worse, all the benefits that you have discovered when it comes to nutritional supplements, that's all garbage.
Well, yeah, imagine my shock in the morning when I was listening to, I think it was CBS that first published this in the morning, that, you know, basically the last 18 years of my career just were washed down the drain, that everything we were doing is useless. And, of course, I had to wait to get into my office and start downloading the articles to see exactly what all the stir was about and what this was based upon. And it became fairly easy to see that this was just kind of one more of those kind of what we call hit jobs or smears on the industry. But this was a very calculated one, I think, and interesting that such a prestigious journal as Annals of Internal Medicine sort of came out with this editorial the way they did.
Well, you know, I just have to say, and I know you're going to echo the sentiment, is that I found it very intemperate. You know, in this field of science, you know, the arguments generally are, you know, you put on your velvet gloves and you, in a very muted tone, sometimes you'll say that you dispute the findings of this article. And there's, like, scientific debate is a very genteel sport. But when they say in an editorial that is entitled "Enough is Enough, Stop Wasting Money on Vitamin and Mineral Supplements," that's pretty egregious. I mean, that's really throwing the gauntlet down, don't you think?
Well, I mean, it's pretty rare in any field of science that somebody comes and says that one study or even a few studies have closed the case, as they said in this case, closed the case, that there's no benefit for something as broad range as vitamins, which really include, you know, 15 different, you know, ingredients or different nutrients, as if somehow one study done one way could just put a nail in the coffin on, you know, nutrients that are actually vital for life. So it is quite unusual to see such a strong sort of opinion on something. Nowhere would we ever look at one clinical trial on a drug and someone would say, this is proof that all drugs should be stopped, we should stop wasting our money on drugs.
Exactly.
But yet it seems,
it's kind of like the analogy
at the beginning, you know, the media took this and went with it very quickly.
Right. And that's the other thing that I'm concerned about, is that we have a very uncritical media. You know, I was actually having dinner with my aunt, who is, you know, I won't even mention her age because I think she'll get mad at me. But she said, you know, I was watching TV the other day and I was very upset because I saw them on one of the morning shows discussing the vitamin studies, and they had two experts there. And she said generally, and she's pretty smart, she said generally when you have a discussion, you have one person from one side and you have a person from the other side. And she said that both experts, both were in total agreement that vitamins were worthless. And she said, you know, she said, Ron, why weren't you on that program to express your point of view? And I said, well, you know, maybe I need to get a better publicist, or maybe, you know, the major TV networks just want to hear one point of view, because the reporting on it was very uncritical and one-sided.
Yeah, and if you read carefully the news articles, especially the ones that were in print, they quoted the same sort of people, the same individuals in many cases, over and over, even many that were unrelated to the publishing of these studies. And then there was sort of this sort of regurgitation of even decades-old mantras of, you know, unregulated industry.
Yes.
And Congress needs to change the laws, as if it almost appears as if there's sort of a pre-written template sort of awaiting the next story.
Right.
Rather than really good journalism looking into these as real stories.
Right. And you know what, and I pointed out in my article, and I think you touch upon this, is that there appears to be an agenda. And the agenda is that there's a constant drumbeat of stories about supplements are dangerous, supplements are harmful, they're unregulated, who knows what you're getting in the bottle, there's no quality control, the FDA needs more power, their hands are tied, and we need to, and here's the take-home message, we need to enact stronger legislation to control this runaway industry that is just rampant with problems and basically a ripoff.
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit the nail on the head. There is definitely a large concerted effort, and I won't accuse any individuals of that, but we can imagine who those people may be, who would like to see the supplement industry either go away or be definitely, you know, curbed dramatically. And they're ultimately trying to go back to the 1994 passage of the Dietary Supplement Health Education Act or some new legislation that can beef up FDA's ability to shut down or curb the industry dramatically. So it does seem like there is an agenda. It's very clear, I think. And I think using science and regulation or whatever else they need, I think they will attempt to accomplish that, hopefully, and we hope they don't accomplish that.
Right. Okay. Well, you know, so clearly, you know, we've established that the way that this was done, the tone, the media barrage, that the whole thing was, you know, rather unfair. But let's, you know, have an open mind here. And because I know you're an objective scientist and you know how to read a scientific article. And, let's break it down for our listeners. Because look, it's very hard for the lay public to lay their hands on medical journals, much less understand the arguments that are made in medical journals, because we who are in the medical field, we're taught to read articles critically and to you know, pour through some of this boring data and sometimes criticize the methodology that's used to back up a certain point. So why don't you take it away, because you've done it very well in your article that you posted at pointinstitute.org.
Well, the three papers that are supposedly the witnesses or if we're going to look at this as the case is closed, that the
right.
if we call the
witnesses for the prosecution.
Papers,
right.
Exactly. Three of those were published together in the Annals of Internal Medicine. And, of course, the editorial board created an editorial that basically said that this is what you mentioned, enough is enough. So these three papers, which were independent of one another, of course, all published in the same issue, and if we want to just run down through them one at a time, the first one was a study that was originally designed to look at IV chelation, EDTA chelation, which you're probably very familiar
right.
with.
I'm very familiar with that study. In fact, I'm so familiar with that study because I actually helped to design it. I was sitting in on the early phase of that study where basically it's about chelation. It's the society of chelation is valuable. And it turned out that study, surprisingly, it really took the cardiology world by storm, because it turns out that chelation does help patients, and particularly diabetic patients. And this created a firestorm of controversy, because they said, how could that possibly be? They published it, but very reluctantly. And there was a part of that study that looked at the use of vitamins.
Right. So as you mentioned, that was published actually last March, this last March of 2013. And it was published in JAMA, and it was one of the most hilarious editorials accompanied that article, where they almost had to apologize for publishing
yes.
this positive chelation study. I just reread the editorial, and it's really a hoot. But in this case, they looked at chelation, EDTA chelation, which is the part that is what is thought to bring out some of the metals that may cause some of the damage in cardiovascular disease. And they looked at a placebo chelation, in this case just regular saline. And then each group was either given a high dose of vitamin mineral supplement or giving a placebo supplement. And so it's in the placebo group, that is the group that wasn't given the EDTA, they wanted to say, well, was there a difference between the group giving no chelation but given supplements versus those that weren't given supplements? So even though it wasn't really the primary purpose of the trial, they were just going to look at that data. And what they found, in conclusion, they basically said they found really no difference between those two groups. But that's where, you need to get down into the details and start asking a question, well, what exactly are they measuring? So we're trying to find a difference. Now, these are all, as you know, these were all people that came into the trial having already had a previous heart attack.
Right. So these people were pretty far gone, in terms of the disease. So it doesn't really speak to the issue, can vitamins protect people from developing heart disease? These people already had heart disease.
Right. So this was what we would call a secondary prevention. They had a heart attack, and at some point after that heart attack, they entered into this trial, and they were all over 50 years old. Had a previous heart attack, et cetera, and then they were either given one of these. Now, if you start asking the question, well, were these people also on other drugs that could have affected their cardiovascular disease outcome? As it turns out, dramatically. So if you just look at the number of drugs. 80% of these subjects in both the placebo and the vitamin group, 82% of them were on aspirin, 70% on beta blockers, 70% on statins, 60% on either ACE inhibitors or what's called angiotensin receptor blockers, ARBs, mm-hmm. And about 20% of them were on some sort of drug to help control their blood sugar. So this was not an undrugged group with a high amount of pharmaceutical mm-hmm. use, almost all of which would have had a dramatic effect on the secondary outcome.
Right. I actually sometimes refer to this in, you know, when I look at some vitamin studies, I refer to this as the Lazarus effect. You know, Lazarus was brought back to life by Jesus. And, you know, it would be a tough claim that people who are very sick or nigh unto death can be miraculously revived merely by taking a Centrum or a multivitamin.
Right, right. And so if let's go one step further here. So when you start asking the question about, well, did they stay on their supplements? So they're taking these supplements, and that was the intention over these 40 weeks of chelation. But as it turns out, about 46% or half of the subjects either stopped the trial or stopped taking their supplements altogether. Mm. So half of these subjects stopped taking their supplements during the time of the trial. And then they started asking questions about, what other things were they taking? If they were taking statins, if they were taking these other things, they didn't know whether they were taking placebo or vitamins. So guess what? About 40% of these subjects, almost half of these subjects in both groups, were taking vitamins on their own, as they discovered. Because they couldn't tell them not to take their vitamins because they had to be blinded towards whether they were getting the supplements or not. So about half of these people were taking other vitamin and mineral supplements.
I think the point you're making is they weren't on some sort of metabolic ward where their behavior was very carefully controlled. They were under observation so that they couldn't sneak something else into their program. Who knows what else they were doing?
Right. So these people, you're basically trying to differentiate between this highly, this group that's already had a heart attack, that's already taking lots of pharmaceuticals to reduce their risk of a secondary heart attack or any other event in their life, and then half of the ones taking their vitamins stop taking them, and probably half of the ones that are supposedly not taking supplements actually are taking vitamins. And not surprisingly, they didn't find a real big difference between these two groups. And yet, nonetheless, when they drilled down and they looked at different groups within those populations, they found that the group, if you took the groups that were not taking statins, which obviously are known to have an effect on secondary events in patients that have already had an MI, if you look at the people who are not on a statin, they found a 38% reduction, which was statistically significant between the two groups, between the group that was given vitamins and the group that was given placebo.
Dr. Williams, you really have to drill down. It's like, you know, you sat there and, you know, your eyes were crossing as you, you know, tried to read the fine print of this, and probably on, you know, page 17 of this study, somewhere deep within the description of the study methodology was this disclosure that, you know, if you look at this group not on statins, that in fact there was a benefit, but of course that doesn't merit a headline because the headline is the vitamins didn't make a difference overall.
Well, right, and as you have to drill down and look at this, not only did the statin group appear to be, in this case, was statistically beneficial, but there was another trend which I think supports this idea that the longer someone was between the time they had their heart attack and the time they entered the trial, the longer that was, the less effective the vitamins were. And I see that as being the longer they were on drugs, the longer they were on the pharmacology, the pharmacological effects of all the drugs, the less likely the vitamins were going to have a benefit for them.
Right.
But the authors of the paper want to caution us, you know, not to look at this statin data to consider this as being helpful for patients. So they're cautioning us not to read too much into those effects.
Right.
But in the end, however, these authors are smart enough to realize that they need to be cautious about their data. They actually even say in their paper that because of the non-adherence, because of the people that weren't taking their supplements, and because of the limited effects that they saw, that this limits the conclusion of non-efficacy. They're actually warning us, don't consider this to be ineffective because our data may not be good enough to warrant the conclusion of non-efficacy. Something obviously the editorialist must not have read in their paper.
And Dr. Quillies, if I'm not mistaken, in that paper, when chelation was combined with vitamins, there was a synergistic benefit. It seemed that the group that had chelation minus the vitamins, I think they didn't do as well as the group that got chelation plus vitamins, or am I mistaken?
Well, that actually has not been published yet, but there was a report that came out this last year in a meeting that suggested that there was a higher statistical benefit compared to placebo when people who were given chelation had the added vitamins, which you would imagine. But that data has not yet been published for us to kind of sift through and look at.
Okay, so that's number one. So a study that clearly has some drawbacks and weaknesses and certainly can't be used to substantiate the point that vitamins and supplements are worthless. Enough is enough. Let's be done with it. There are two other studies that are of concern, however.
Right, and just to add one last thing, that was the study that probably had the highest doses of vitamins.
Yes.
And yet there was no risk, there was no safety issues.
Yes.
And so it's important to understand that this wasn't one of these low doses. This was actually a very high dose of vitamin
yes.
supplement, and there was no risk that they saw in any patient. So,
right. And by the way, that was actually, I remember in creating the study design, because I participated in some of the early meetings on that, that was a concern because the buzz was that, you know, because of some previous studies on beta carotene in people who had heart disease, finished smokers, that you really didn't want to use multivitamins, or that might even be unethical to use multivitamins that were very strong in a study. But nonetheless, they decided to use the vitamins in this particular study, and they overcame the objections because they thought, well, you know, if we'll keep monitoring these patients, and if they're having harmful side effects, we'll have to curtail that part of the study, giving these high dose vitamins. And they actually vindicated the vitamins. They found that by no means were they harmful. While on the one hand they couldn't find a benefit, there certainly wasn't a downside.
Right. And the second study that we mentioned kind of went to the other end of the scale. This is using a very low dose, one a day type mm-hmm. vitamin. And this was part of what we call the Physicians Health Study. There's
yep.
been this is actually the second one of these Physicians Health Studies where they take thousands and thousands of men, in this case male physicians, and follow them for years with a number of different outcomes, not just vitamin-only outcomes. But this particular part of the study was looking at whether giving men, in this case men over 65, who are all healthy and not known to have any nutrient deficiencies, if we gave half of them a multivitamin, in this case it was, we can say it's a Centrum Silver,
please,
I think.
Yeah, go for it.
It was just a basic multivitamin, nothing really designed specifically, as we'll find out, for cognitive health. But they gave these individuals either a placebo or the Centrum Silver, and then followed them on average for about 8.5 years, looking to see whether they could find any changes in their cognitive or measurable cognitive levels. And not surprisingly, they found, at least in the conclusion, that at least in male physicians age 65 years or older, the long-term use of a daily Centrum Silver did not change or have a measurable effect on their cognitive benefits. But, you know, there's really some problems with this study. First of all, the Physicians Health Study, in this case the Physicians Health Study 2, was not designed for this in mind. So they didn't plan for mm-hmm. this. In fact, not only did they not plan for this, they didn't even take the baseline level, their first, you know, baseline analysis of their cognitive abilities, in fact, until an average of 2.5 years later, and in some cases it was over 5 years after they had either received their placebo or their supplement, that they actually looked at the first cognitive study.
And so, let me just say it as an aside that it is a scientific no-no to take a study that is designed to look at one thing. The first study looked at chelation. The second study looked at overall health risks and try and tease out data that conforms to another hypothesis, which is, are vitamins helpful? It isn't really the way you do scientific studies. If you want to study vitamins, you do a study that's focused specifically on the vitamin usage, and neither study was focused on the vitamin usage.
Well, right, and in this case, they were looking at vitamin usage, but they weren't looking, or they hadn't intentionally initially looked at or wanted to, you know, design the trial or what we call power the study to look for changes in cognitive levels in these individuals. It's sort of like an afterthought saying, well, hey, let's just start measuring cognitive level and see what happens. And as it turns out, they started this, you know, well into the trial, in some cases 5 years into the trial of some of these individuals. And most reviewers would have said, you know, wait a minute, that's not exactly data that's useful. This may be something that what we call maybe helpful to generate hypotheses for future studies, but very rarely would somebody use a study like or data collected like this as some sort of conclusion.
Well, you can be sure that if the study had turned out positive, if the Centrum company would have started to make the claim that our vitamins make you smarter, that the FDA and the scientific community would be in an uproar. They would say, how can you possibly make this very grandiose statement based on this very weak study that's full of methodological flaws?
Exactly. And interestingly, the Physician's Health Study 2, the same population, actually did show a reduction in risk for cancer and cataracts. So we already have publications showing that as weak as this setup was, they did have some statistical benefits
Centrum outcomes. Actually made a big deal out of it. They said, "Oh, this is great. Our vitamins now have been shown to reduce cancer risk by 20%." And they started.
Well, right. They couldn't say that directly, but they had to use sort of a roundabout ways of saying
it. They had to use weasel words because otherwise, they would get in trouble with the FDA because you can't make even truthful claims under the present system. You can't say, well, disease claims. Then all of a sudden, Centrum has to go through a very exhaustive and expensive FDA process to be approved as a cancer protective drug.
Exactly.
They can say it protects you, it helps you, you know, supports the body's resistance or something, you know, we know the weasel words that have to be used.
Right. So there was some other issues. I'll just bring up a few more with this trial that made it even more complicated. But so the Physician's Health Study, as we mentioned, wasn't designed originally to look at this. And of course, Centrum never really designed their multivitamin specifically for this in mind. But they basically said that, you know, other supplements, you can take other supplements as long as you're not taking any supplement that contains higher than USRDA levels of vitamin E, vitamin C, beta carotene, or vitamin A. They didn't really restrict any of these men from taking other supplements. So they could have been taking high doses of B vitamins, which are known to, let's say, reduce homocysteine, which studies have shown to have an effect on cognitive levels. They could have been taking ginkgo or phosphatidylserine or, you know, omega-3 fatty acids from fish. They could have taken any of those supplements, and which we know would have an effect on cognitive levels, and that was not really detected in this trial. So really problematic when you're looking for an outcome not to restrict other things that have an effect on that outcome.
And so their policy was don't ask, don't tell. You know, basically, we're not even going to go there and ask them about their use of other cognitive supplements. And by the way, and this also was a group of very smart, health-conscious physicians. So they could well have been using some of these types of things.
Well, we know from other papers of the Physician's Health Study that at least a third of these subjects were taking other multivitamins. So we know that at least a third of these patients, and we don't know which groups were taking more, were already taking multivitamins, many of which could have had high levels of B vitamins and other things like that.
And by the way, I'm sorry. If you don't mind, I'll interrupt you. There's some evidence, and you know, you certainly your career is about following this evidence and marshaling the data, that relatively high dose B vitamins, particularly, you know, some of the bioavailable B vitamins like methylfolate, and methylcobalamin, these bioavailable B vitamins produce cognitive benefits in several studies that have been done recently.
Right, and well, you know the effects. Anything that will help, maybe help affect cortisol levels or stress-induced cortisol levels. Cortisol is a cognitive depleting hormone. So, yeah, there's a number of different things that could easily have gone into this and either washed out any difference that they saw or created an anomaly within the study. But as it turns out, most of the trials, when you look at a trial like this, you sort of have to, at the beginning, figure out what is the difference that you're planning to see, in this case over 8 years of cognitive decline in an average person. And so if you're trying to see a change in that, obviously that change has to be big enough in order to see an effective difference between how bad it was going to get versus how well you improved it. Well, as it turns out, they predicted a change in cognitive level in these individuals, but they actually saw a much smaller level of change. So it's much harder to get any statistical benefits in this trial. So what I like to tell people is this was a study that was not designed originally to measure cognitive function, and they chose a supplement in this case which was not designed to change cognitive function, and it's not surprising that at the end we saw no statistical change in cognitive function. But really, this is a bad design of a trial and should never have been used to be evidence really for anything, let alone this idea that the case is closed and the evidence is in and we can put vitamins away forever, especially since this trial was the same one that showed reduced risk for other chronic diseases like cancer and cataracts. So it's pretty amazing that this was used for that purpose.
It is really amazing. Now, does the average journalist, even, you know, medical writer or health writer, have the technical skills or even the time, because, you know, under pressure of deadlines and getting the headline out, because these are very lurid headlines that sell newspapers and magazines and, you know, or make up TV broadcasts, do they actually have the skill set that very few people possess? You possess it, to some extent I possess it, to sit down and analyze these studies and find faults within the studies?
Well, yes and no. I think even just, I mean, this is the problem. I'm not even certain that the journalists that put these sound bites together and create, I don't know what the timeline is on some of these, you know, websites, but even if they were to print out the full article, which I'm my guessing is many of them don't, and read the results and discussion section, which usually the authors are required to give the limitations of their study, explain, you know, the cautions of their data, and in there you can usually find you know, either the direct cautions, like I just read in the previous one where they say, you know, don't overplay this inefficacy, or the what I would say are the telltale signs to look further to the data. And I'd say the average journalist should be able to figure some of those things out. Unfortunately, many of these journals aren't available free online. Most journalists should pay the, you know, $30 or $15 or whatever it is to do this if they're going to write a paper on that particular article. I would say the average person, even maybe the average clinician that doesn't have access to a library, is likely not going to maybe download and pay all this money to read the full article. They're going to read the abstract and the conclusion that's, you know, in the summary, and maybe that's it. And that's unfortunate, because really the details and the questions and the nuance comes by reading the full paper.
Right. And then there was a third paper in that array,
right,
of papers in the Annals of Internal Medicine.
The third one was simply what we typically call a systematic review. This is where somebody goes to the literature and collects all kinds of information. They have sort of a preset criteria of what they're going to allow sort of in their analysis, and then they crunch the data and they look at it. And in this case, they looked at thousands of papers for vitamin and mineral supplements and the prevention of cardiovascular disease and cancer and sort of all-cause death, all-cause mortality. And they looked through thousands of papers. They ended up only selecting 103 articles And those 103 articles only represented 26 different clinical trials. So they weeded down based on all their selection criteria. They, for instance, weeded out any clinical trial that used a vitamin or a mineral that was above the IOM's upper limit, the Institute of Medicine's upper limit, which unfortunately means that any trial that had more than 4,000 IUs of vitamin D or 35 milligrams of niacin or even 1 milligram of folic acid were excluded. And we know that many products that have more than the dose that's listed there have been shown to be effective. So right off the top, they eliminate any of those. And also, they eliminate any studies where the subjects were known to have a nutrient deficiency. So, which sort of doesn't make any sense if you're testing nutrients for their ability, and you eliminate anyone that is deficient in that nutrient from the trial, you're really stacking the deck against the ability of the supplement to work.
Right. So, is this sometimes referred to as a meta-analysis?
Well, in this case, it wasn't a true meta-analysis. A meta-analysis is where you try to literally put the data into a new statistical model and try to force the data together, to reach a new conclusion.
In other words, to weight the data and come up with a new conclusion about what it all adds up to.
Right. It's sort of like taking, if all these studies were done together, what would the data have amounted? That's what we call a meta-analysis, which I once heard a researcher say, meta-analysis is to analysis what metaphysics is to physics. typically, when you take papers and try to merge them together, you can get some strange results you shouldn't really rely on meta-analysis data very much. But in this case, it was more what we call a systematic review, which is one step sort of away from a meta-analysis. But what they basically found was that they found no consistent evidence that the supplements affected CVD, cardiovascular disease, cancer, or all-cause mortality. But as I point out in my written critique of this, is, you know, if you think of vitamin D, which is really a fat-soluble hormone, and let's say vitamin C, which is this water-soluble antioxidant, they are completely different molecules having completely different functions in the body. And to bring them together in a systematic review just because they're both technically vitamins is really scientifically odd. We would never include two completely different pharmaceutical substances that work completely differently and try to merge the data as if somehow we should analyze them together. But yet it seems as if because they're sort of blinded by sort of desire to debunk vitamins as a group, they bring these together in sort of an unscientific way, which I think really exposes a little bit of the agenda when it comes to looking at this.
Would the word cherry-picking apply to this process?
Well, certainly in the selection of cherry-picking, they cherry-picked the data that was almost guaranteed not to work. But they even admit that the study design that they chose was primarily used to evaluate drug therapies, and that they even say, quote, the design might not ideally be suited to evaluate nutrients. And I, of course, would wholeheartedly agree. This is certainly not a way to evaluate nutrients, and yet, nonetheless, even though the authors admitted that this may not even be a reasonable way to judge nutrients, the editorial authors of the paper said this is evidence that the case is closed.
The case is closed. That's a pretty dramatic statement.
Yeah, I mean, I think not dramatic for this kind of research, but really for any kind of research. If you and I could list the number of pharmaceuticals that have failed not only one but multiple trials, I guarantee you nobody called the case was closed until they finally got something that worked and they could get the FDA approval for that. So, and you mentioned something earlier that I think is really, really critical to this analysis, is that, you know, FDA requires any maker of a multivitamin or a dietary supplement to state that, you know, these products are not intended to cure, treat, or prevent any disease. So by definition, we're actually supposed to not be treating or curing any disease. And yet somehow, when this is the conclusion of a bad clinical trial, somehow, you know, this is sort of the end of the health benefit of all vitamins.
Yeah, I mean, it's like it's you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't. In other words, if it were to be the case that a vitamin or supplement, had a dramatic effect on the course of heart disease or cancer, that would be bad because then particular supplement would be singled out for FDA approval. You couldn't say that it would be helpful, even though it is. And if you did, you'd have to go through the very arduous and expensive approval process.
Right. That's totally true. And the frustrating thing is I've been sort of using this phrase over the last several months, is that we really moved from evidence-based medicine to medicine-based evidence, meaning,
okay.
You know, the pharmaceutical companies are setting the bar for the evidence that is available. And, of course, FDA is basically coming right behind and sort of rubber stamping pharmaceutical evidence as the only evidence available, and or the only bar that we should be measuring efficacy. And that's really unfortunate because the number of Americans that are not getting enough of the vital nutrients in their diet is still way higher than many people think. Probably in the vitamin D world, it's probably close to 100% of the United States population is not getting the RDA or the DRI of vitamin D, but we can say the same thing for calcium, magnesium, vitamin A, surprisingly, and a number of other nutrients. So this notion that people should shy away from nutrient supplementation as if it's harmful and certainly as if it's not beneficial is really bad science and I think also bad public health recommendation.
Yeah, also, you know, it paints a very broad brushstroke unnecessarily because I think what we're looking at is we're looking at 20th century supplementation. You know, some of the studies that they look at, for example, are based on beta carotene, which is a very narrow focus form of the broad spectrum carotenoids. It's been years since I've used beta carotene. I always use a mixed carotenoid. My multivitamins contain mixed carotenoids. You know, they're broad spectrum. And the same thing with vitamin E, for example, that, many of these studies are based on alpha tocopherol. We now know that, if you use just alpha tocopherol, you block the efficacy of the other, tocotrienols and tocopherols, which should be present in a mixed form, especially with gamma tocopherol present. So what I've said is, well, this may be indicting some forms of 20th century nutrition. We're now fully in the 21st century, and we're looking at very promising supplements that weren't even evaluated in these studies. Mixed tocopherol vitamin E, various nutrients, nutraceuticals like potent curcumins and EGCG and resveratrol. These are part of the supplements that they want us to throw out, but they were in no way evaluated. Coenzyme Q10, things like carnitine, and so on.
Well, yeah, I think that's another good point that one of the frustrating things that I see when I read these papers, and I'm sure you do the same thing, is knowing what we know about the research in vitamins and minerals and other nutraceuticals that you were just mentioning, the published trials, especially the ones that are done by individuals who know very little about how supplements should be used, some of these clinical trials are just horrible. They're using the wrong dose of the wrong supplement, sometimes, as you mentioned, using a synthetic version of beta-carotene or a synthetic version of vitamin E at the wrong dose, in the wrong patient population, and not surprisingly, getting either no outcomes or bad outcomes. And this is virtually not at all how, you know, clinicians like yourself and others who are trained and knowledgeable about supplements are using these. So it doesn't really correspond very well with the actual practical application of these by knowledgeable healthcare professionals, and yet these are the studies that are on CBS News and USA Today and New York Times and Chicago Sun, Tribune. And so this is the ones that we keep defending, and yet this is really not how, you know, probably you practice supplementation. And yet we're still forced to sort of evaluate these and sort of defend our own practices.
All right. This excellent critique is available for our listeners at pointinstitute.org. Go there, and you can also find lots of interesting articles by today's guest, Dr. Thomas Gwilliams. And so, you know, in conclusion, what's the take-home message? What should the public do? You know, amidst all this conflicting and consternating information.
Well, I think we ought to stay balanced. We ought to realize, I think, both that, you know, this kind of information is going to be hyped, but also we need to be careful that, you know, we don't just buy into everything that every supplement company is saying either. You know, you see the infomercials or hear the infomercials that I do. I think the idea is to be smart. I mean, I think most people realize from the data that the nutrition that they need versus the nutrition that they're getting, there is a gap there. And I think a